हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 53 Shloka Anusharana, summary of verses, verses 1 to 16, swallowing the second forest fire. Sukadeva Goswami said, what is that doing?
The pen.
Yes, out of that whole scene, it's the pen that catches my attention. The phone, what is it doing?
Recording you.
What kind of recording?
Private.
No, I mean, is it audio,
no, video? No,
huh?
Video.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it?
Last 30 days.
Yeah, well, just a couple of days ago, I noticed, why is it always sitting up like that? Antenna kind of thing. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami said, well, the cowherd boys were completely absorbed in playing. Their cows wandered far away. They hungered for more grass, and with no one to watch them, they entered a dense forest. Passing from one part of the great forest to another, the goats, cows, and buffaloes eventually entered an area overgrown with sharp canes. The heat of a nearby forest fire made them thirsty, and they cried out in distress. Not seeing the cows before them, Krishna, Rama, and their cowherd friends suddenly felt repentant for having neglected them, right? Because they're so busy playing, so absorbed in the playing, then the cows wandered off. And because they wandered off, now they're in this distressful condition, so they're feeling bad that they're now in a distressful condition. The boys searched all around, but could not discover where they had gone. Then the boys began tracing out the cow's path by noting their hoof prints and the blades of grass the cows had broken with their hooves and teeth. All the cowherd boys were in great anxiety because they had lost their source of livelihood. Right? Because as cowherds, this is what they do. They lose their cows, then they've got a problem. Within the Munja forest, the cowherd boys finally found their valuable cows, who had lost their way and were crying. Then the boys, thirsty and tired, herded the cows onto the path back home. The Supreme Personality of Godhead called out to the animals in a voice that resounded like a rumbling cloud. Hearing the sound of their own names, the cows were overjoyed and called out to the Lord in reply. Suddenly a great forest fire appeared on all sides, threatening to destroy all the forest creatures. Like a chariot driver, the wind swept the fire onward, and terrible sparks shot in all directions. Indeed, the great fire extended its tongues of flame towards all moving and non-moving creatures. Footnote 21. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 7 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, The Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddhaprema Rasa, Rasa Dharma, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Right, so this situation like this, how it goes up, then this is arranged for the pastimes of Krishna with the cowherd boys. Because then in this, it will increase the affection between Krishna and the cowherd boys. As the cows and cowherd boys stared at the forest fire attacking them on all sides, they became fearful. The boys then approached Krishna and Balaram for shelter, just as those who are disturbed by fear of death approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The boys addressed them as follows, 1 to 8. The cowherd boys said, O Krishna, Krishna, most powerful one, O Rama, You whose prowess never fails, please save your devotees who are about to be burned by this forest fire and have come to take shelter of you. Krishna, certainly your own friends shouldn't be destroyed. O knower of the nature of all things, we have accepted you as our Lord, and we are souls surrendered unto you. Sukadeva Goswami said, hearing these pitiful words from his friends, the Supreme Lord Krishna told them, just close your eyes and do not be afraid. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Krishna thought, these boys should not see me swallowing the fire. It should be done without anyone seeing, as they are so hot, tired and hot. I should place them under the cool shade of the beautiful Bandira tree. After considering in this way, he said, close your eyes. The boys questioned, but you are joking. How can we escape from the forest fire if we close our eyes? To which Krishna replied, do not fear. Today I will use another means to protect you.
Why he told them to close their eyes now and didn't
before? Before the acharyas mentioned that he just did it in such a way that was so quick that they didn't see. He's with the cowherd boys. You can have more fun. All right, the boys replied and immediately closed their eyes. Then the Supreme Lord, the master of all mystic power, opened his mouth and swallowed the terrible fire, saving his friends from danger. Footnote 22. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 12 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Right, so just how he goes about it, that is then a human way, because he could just, by his will, it would be gone. It doesn't have to actually have a reason other than his desire. Right? But people like it when there's a whole progression. You know, you can see cause and effect and all these kind of things. So that's the human thing. They like to have all this in place. So then he does it in that way, and it's fun for him. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. One of the boys said, friends, Krishna knows everything about the powers of jewels and mantras to take away the effects of poison and fire. But the methods are not effective in everyone's presence. Therefore, if you close your eyes, you will be alone. That is why he's telling us to close our eyes. The boys then agreed. Right, because when you so they're taking that it's certain you have certain mantras and things like that. So because they're governed, many of these mantras are governed by tantric rules. Then they have to be private. They have to be. You can't know about them. You can't speak the mantra. Like let's say you have a mantra and somebody's giving you the tantric thing or a ritual they've given you. If it's a private one, it works for you as long as you don't tell it to anybody else, or even that they don't see it. But if they see it or you tell them, you lose the power. It's just the way they work. So then this cowherd boy is suggesting this, is that Krishna knows these kind of jewels and mantras, but they only work if no one, you know, sees or hears. Right? So you close your eyes and Krishna's alone, you know, in practicality. As far as the ritual goes. And then from that, then it will work nicely. Yes?
Well, I think the Gayatri Mantra also taught him not to show the accounting. Is it the same for the same reason?
That's That's because then there the benefits can be taken away, but it's not that you lose the power of the mantra, just the benefit of your chanting. So if you're chanting, like say you're outside like this and you're chanting so they can be seen, then the rule is that the Gandharvas, Yaksha, Rakshasas, anybody that lives in the Antariksha, they can take the benefits of the mantra. Does that make sense? So that's why it's covered. But it's also just proper, because if it's covered, then your focus will be better. You know, like that. Just like your fingers are supposed to be together. Fingers should be together when you chant. You don't allow there to be any gap between the fingers when you chant. That's why you generally keep your palm and your fingers at a 90-degree angle. Then your fingers can get to all the joints without moving. But if you don't do that, like a lot of you start here and you go down and like that, because of the gaps, everything the focus falls through the gaps. We can say, oh, but we chant, we don't care for the rules. That's all right if you're transcendental, but if you're not liberated, then the rules are effective. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, was he affected by all the things that Hiranyakashipu did? No. So if we're also not affected, then don't worry about any of these things. But if someone comes up with a cricket bat and hits you up the side of the head and it bothers you, then you should be closing your fingers and do that. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. It's just it helps. In other words, if your focus is great and you sit out in the middle of, you know, time, you know, what do you call it? Times Square, and chant your, you know, mantras so everybody can see, and your meditation is perfect, great. But if it's not, you find you're distracted, then these are the ways to make it not distracted. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? Yeah. That's the whole point. Because those that do, but let's say, like sitting in a quiet place, you know, on yoga mats, and these kind of things, and having some nice New Agey pictures on the wall, that these help meditation. We're happy to do. Why? Because the karmis do that in their yoga studios. But if the karmis don't do what I'm talking about now in the yoga studios, oh, then it's we're devotees. We don't care for the rules. But if the karmis do it, then we're fine. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that these things help. That's why the yoga system says, sit in a place not too high, not too low, this, that, blah. But even you do all that, it's still a problem. Unless it's devotional. So just trying to control on its own, then it's good chance it's not going to happen. But if it's being done on the principle of devotion, then that can actually control the mind. So that's your main thing. And then these things are just things that help. Does that make sense? Krishna delivered the boys from all afflictions, Kritcharat, from fatigue and thirst, from entering the dense forest. He did this by immediately bringing them to the base of the Bandira tree. Right? So they closed their eyes, and then he removed the fire, and he took them all to the base of the Bandira tree. Right? So then everything works out. They don't have to walk all that distance. They don't have to be hungry. And so he removed the hunger, thirst, all that. So now, having done all this, then they're going to be quite comfortable. Right? In his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, the second forest fire represents the attack of atheism and other antagonistic philosophies on Krishna consciousness. Srila Sanatana Goswami.
I don't see it.
They're like a forest fire. They'll destroy everything. Like that, because then what will it do? It'll increase the material desire. So, okay, let's try this. In the morning, at the Mangal Arti. Oh yeah, now you have those guys practicing for the.
It also destroys a lot of things.
In the morning, during the Brahma Muhurta, in front of the deities, a song that's a set of eight verses is sung, and the first shloka, the first line is right. So the forest fire of material existence. So if when you don't see Krishna in something and try to establish that it's working by methods other than Krishna, that's technically atheism. We're so used to it, we don't even notice. Like someone saying, oh, you can't do that, why not? Because it's a bad thing. Why not? Because it's not socially acceptable. Why not? You know, because, you know, it's a disturbance. Everybody knows that. Have I actually spoken any Krishna consciousness? No. Because so what have I actually been speaking? I've been speaking pranamoy, which is technically atheistic. It's non-theistic morality. So non-theistic morality means atheistic morality, because it's based on what we feel is okay. Because you go to another place, another culture, they'll say it's fine. So it just depends on the individuals and what they say. So it's not based on Krishna, it's based on ourselves. So the whole idea of vox populi, you know, and what people will feel, what they'll think, or we have to fit in, all these are technically atheism. But it's dealt with in a more pleasant fashion. Because coming from atheistic cultural backgrounds, then one would just take it as normal life when that thing is atheistic life. Because theistic life starts with following the Shastra, following Varnashram, following the Pancharatra, following the Bhagavat method. But we won't accept the Vedic Pancharatric, you know, to what degree we like. Bhagavat will accept on the principles that you don't have to follow any rules. So therefore, on the strength of the Bhagavat, we will follow the Dharma. Right? Does that make sense? So that's technically atheism. Though for devotees, it's more of a cultural thing rather than a philosophical. So philosophical, then they accept they're all devotees are Vaishnava by philosophy. But by culture, generally, much of the time, devotees tend to be, because of their background is atheistic, they will be atheistic in their religion. Does that make sense? So it actually goes much deeper than just they're out there propounding that there's no God and this and that. That's an extreme case. So that means philosophically they are atheists. But devotees are never philosophically atheists. They all accept Krishna and they're all like that. But culturally, much of the time, devotees can be a bit atheistic. So this will remove... I mean, if they're philosophically atheistic, then it'll remove that. But culturally, then that's the... That. So that the point is religion, its only purpose is serving Krishna. So if you see religion without Krishna, that's why it says it's a waste of time, because it's technically atheistic. Mechanically it's working because it is theistic, because it's Krishna. But if we don't see it that way, acknowledge it that way, then how will we get the benefit? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole. That's then what it's removing. And other antagonistic philosophies, where we take the philosophy and use it for our own purposes, trying to support the principles of pranamoy by using the Bhagavat philosophy, then that misapplication and all that, you know, I mean, we discussed that a lot this morning, so it's that same thing.
Just I'm saying that any deity can represent as it's a painting.
No, but this is specifically that mood. Well, the demon means all these things are there in a demon, but each demon brings out specific flavors.
I'm just trying to see the connection.
We said the forest fire of material existence, and so that's why is it? Why is something called material? What's the difference between material and spiritual?
Consciousness.
And so, what's the difference in the consciousness?
For me, of course.
Yes. So if one's Krishna conscious, it's spiritual, and if one's not Krishna conscious, it's material. So that's what makes material life. That's what's antagonistic to Krishna consciousness. So that attitude, does that make sense? That's there. It's just like in the Anartas, you have Asat Krishna and you have Hriday Dalbalya. So one is the weakness of heart, so that you're inclined towards these things. You don't have the strength. The other one is the taste for. One could say they're both the same. And in one sense, the effect is there, but they're two different aspects. You know, it's just like, let's say, for example, you go to a Chinese restaurant. Okay? What do you eat the food with? The chopsticks, right? So in one sense, when you say you're going to have a Chinese meal, it means it's the meal with chopsticks. But is it chopsticks that make it Chinese? No. You know what I'm saying? You could eat your salad or your spaghetti with chopsticks. Lasagna might not work very good, but, you know, you understand? So the whole thing is that it goes together. So in other words, this kind of, where you don't see something connected to Krishna, that is the material world. So that basis of that, that's then what causes all the other demoniac things. Right? So you can see this is actually a higher thing. That's why it's coming later. So as it's going through the stages of that. Right? Because then what's after na danam, na janam, na sundarim? Right? Means that we're surrendering to Krishna. So atheism means we're not surrendering. Any connections?
Because it seems like a small wing is forest fire.
Yes, but that's the whole thing. It's just like this.
Because we always skip it.
There's so many things happening. So many technical points like that. But we keep bringing up this very simple thing that's always said about controlling and enjoying. You understand? But you give up controlling and enjoying, everything else goes with it. So you give up the atheism and antagonistic philosophies, then you give up anything that's not Krishna conscious or opposed to Krishna consciousness. Is that so? So that's the thing, is the secondary looks big, the primary starts looking is smaller. So we're starting to get finer and finer. So
we know that the relationships, they based on culture.
Just thinking, I'm not the safe. That's the particular club that the Ananta goes to.
Yeah. but we study philosophy mainly.
Right.
We don't have courses on them, you know, like not as many on Vaishnava culture.
No, but that's why you see, that's what. So if you just study the philosophy, if you want to do a Gita course, how long does it take? Yeah, but if you want to learn the culture that the Gita is teaching along with the philosophy,
much longer.
Then it takes us 2 years.
Right.
That's the difference.
I'm just trying to connect philosophy with culture, because in between there's such a huge gap. Like, we know philosophy.
Yes, because the point is let's say I have milk. It will stay milk unless I add some yogurt.
Yeah.
But when you add yogurt, then it will become cultured. So the problem is we've been in a environment where there is no culture. And so then it's natural the philosophy will be taken, because it does a practical thing. It gets us out of the material world, it gets us into the spiritual world, so we can see the profit. But the cultural aspects, then we're not used to that, because we don't come from a background of culture. Anyone has, wherever they're from, there is some particular culture. But because it's not based on the absolute principles, it's one of, you know, so many cultures that we've been practicing. Does that make sense? Like little kids, the concept that there's a mother and a father, you don't have to explain that to them. Right? It's just inherent, because every life you had a mother and father. Now, how many legs you have every life, whether you crawl, walk, swim, fly, or any combination of that, you know, then that's different every time. What you call food, you know, what you call home, all those things are all different. So that's then why whatever cultural thing we're from doesn't actually have that great of an impression. But the principles of culture that's there, the Vedic culture, that's why it's recommended, because that's something that's universal, because it is culture. The idea that, oh, it's a culture and then there's all these other cultures. No, it is culture, and all the other ones are just taking little bits here and there and putting something together in a speculative way. So, therefore, philosophy's all that people have at best. Because many don't even come from a background where even philosophy is important. So, therefore, it's by association that we hear about, here's the philosophy and this is the cultural reason for it. So that then it gives a scientific basis to the culture. Just like if I say, okay, this is the rule, then people don't like the rule. You explain, oh, but it pleases Krishna. People still don't like the rule. You explain the metaphysics, what goes on, and therefore what benefits you're getting by that and how the different, you know, whatever elements that are involved in it are transforming to get you the result you want. Now we'll accept it. You know what I'm saying? So the concept of that culture is the best method for maintaining relationships, that's not something we're used to. Tradition is just something people do, but why, no one knows. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the guy's sitting there cooking. And from cooking, then he gets annoyed that the ends of his payas have all kinds of foodstuffs on them. So then one day, out of annoyance, he takes the payas and wraps them around his ears. And then, you know, then they don't get into the, you know, into the sauce, right? Like that. And so then somehow or another, that becomes a standard. And now it's a religious practice rather than it's just a practical thing that keeps your payas out of the soup. Yeah, out of the soup, right? Yeah.
They never cook, they only eat.
But then it keeps it out of the soup. Nobody steps on them, right? You know, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is there's a practical reason for things. But and so in the Vedas, they've already worked in the practical stuff. Just like in in English. Other languages, I'm not sure. I think it's a similar thing. But you have English. Now they'll call it modern English. Then you go back sometime, then it'll be like Middle English. You know, like let's say Shakespeare and that kind of stuff. Then you go back like Chaucer, that's Old English. And so I think Old English and let's say, I'm not sure, probably the other Germanic languages, they would be very similar. That they would be the same language. So it changes, and one of the things that changes is how they, is the usage of slurs and slang, these kind of things. Because people just don't want to say the full thing, so they say part of it, they put it together. Like instead of saying, I don't know, then you say, I don't know. You know, like that? So that's the thing, is that, but in Sanskrit, all that's already worked in, it's part of the grammar. Because the thing is what you're going to do is you're going to replace a ta with a da or a da with a ta. Depending on the situation, it's easier to say. So, therefore, Sanskrit already does that. That's why it doesn't change, because whatever would cause the change, just people's laziness in speaking, is already part of the grammar. So it's easier to say according to the grammar than to not follow the grammar. So that's why they change. So it's already worked in. So that way then all the things that would make it easier, what people would want to do, all the different things, these are inherent because this is the nature of people. So what would be the nature of people, that's then what's given. Now one can say is no, but it's not natural for me. That's because what's given in the Vedas is what's natural for humans. Like that. And not being human, then okay, then it may not be so natural. But because the soul, especially you know, in the spiritual world, they're all functioning within that human culture. And so then it's not something that the soul has a difficulty with, actuality. Unless, of course, the atheism in that is getting in the way. So by association, then these things can be explained with the, you know, what's the philosophy, it's, you know, what are the rules, what's the culture, the practical application. That's why the Purana is used as the main literature in Kali Yuga. in previous ages, Upanishads would be the prominent, you know, as far as philosophy. But for Bhagavatam's the prominent, because then it's about transcendence, but it's always about stories, so you can see the culture being applied. But if we're not used to culture, we don't see it anyway. We just see the story, and we don't catch the cultural elements that are there. You know, it's just like, let us say, in those first chapters, in those first, I think it was the fourth, the fifth chapter, Nanda Baba's having, you know, Krishna's birth ceremony. So he's having a big program, he's feeding the Brahmins, he's giving in charity, coming out of his ears, right? Like that. But we just know that he's having the festival and Krishna's there, and they, we may catch the Abhishek part because we're used to Abhishekes, or presents are given, we're used to that. Okay, people come and dress up nicely, then we know when we go to a program or a party, we dress up. We'll catch those things. So we're just, yeah, it's just common. But the part about, let's say, giving in charity to the Brahmins, and he gave a ridiculous amount, that we don't catch. We'll take it, oh, we're devotees, we don't have to do all these things. And, oh, he's a devotee, we don't have to give much and stuff. You understand? So we don't catch actually the cultural things because we don't know the culture. We don't know culture. So only that part of culture that we know will notice that part. Does that make sense? So what we're used to seeing when you go into a situation, that's what you'll see. So by association, by the acharyas and their explanations of the purports, what Prabhupada gives, then Prabhupada puts a lot of discussion on the culture. So the whole Varnashram, it explains why it's done, telling the stories, backstories that go behind it, the acharyas telling the backstories. This is the culture. So actually there's a lot of culture written into the Puranic presentation. So that's why for us, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita are the prominent shastras, because those are all in the Puranic, you know, in the storyline. Or, you know, or itihas, or that kind of aspect. Does that make sense? And even though we may be very smart and we've gone through the modern educational system that claims to be very intelligent, when we got to Vedanta Sutra, we noticed it takes weeks for us to adjust to actual and intellectual approach to knowledge as opposed to a mental approach to knowledge. Is that make sense? So in the same way, as it takes us time to get adjusted to the culture.
How much time?
Enough.
Is it coming tomorrow?
Huh?
Is it coming tomorrow?
Really, quite so patient and forward looking. You know, it says, I thought it was supposed to be here yesterday. Why isn't it here yesterday? Does this make sense? So the more that's discussed and all that, then the better. That's why, you know, it could be seen that the more contemporary value system that is being applied in Krishna consciousness, especially into management, is just what's practical. Because the difficulty is what makes it practical is divesting the endeavor of any cultural aspects. That's what makes it more practical. Because if you have to deal with culture, it slows things down. You know, it takes more time, and time is money, so that means less profit, and like this. But that's the point, is that, yes, maybe immediately it appears to, but in the long run it doesn't. Because you see, in the present, people make lots of money, you know, coming out their ears, and then they end up in jail. Well, in the Vedic system, it seems like it's slower, but in the long run, they actually have more wealth. So that's why the examples are given, so that we'll have that patience to wait. And in the time that we're waiting, then we become more Krishna conscious, so by the time it does arrive, we don't actually worry about it anyway.
Because the difficulty right now is that as a devotee, we don't really sure what is our culture. And then, on top of this, we have big two camps, you know, one is pro-Vedic, one is anti-Vedic, and then within those camps we have, you know, like many, you know, sub-groups. And then the whole thing is going on, and then people just confused, they don't know.
Yes, but I would say it makes it easier if you add into this a third camp, which is the razor's edge, you know, pure devotional service.
But that camp has another difficulty.
Because neither the other two camps like them. That's the problem.
No, because immediately you get cut. Because this is razor edge, so it's very painful.
Yeah, but you get the quickest, most direct benefits. But it also has ways to run it more slowly. That's why you see all the different cantos are there to show whatever level you need to work at. Now in 10th canto, we're showing how those that set the standard of what is the razor's edge, what they do. And then we just work back to, you know, from, I say, Kardama Muni on up, whichever place works best for us. You know. So if we don't find, okay, we're not on pure devotional service, so that drops us down to the first 6 cantos. And so then in that, but we're not also like on that level where we can see everything connected to Krishna, engage everything connected to Krishna, so that drops us out of the 6th canto. So then we have to look at 3rd, 4th, and 5th cantos.
Bhagavad Gita is the best.
Yeah, Bhagavad Gita is the easiest, yes. You know.
It's our book.
Yeah, that's our book. It opens right in our backyard, right? You know, like that. Yeah. Except for there'd be a slight adjustment in the first chapter storyline, in that we're not worried that certain people might die and that will be an upset. We're worried that certain people aren't going to die. We have this war. Is this guy going to be dead? You know, so, yeah. Yes. I say. More along the line of, I say, Wall Street Chaitra. Like that. So the point is we see what Prabhupada advises. We try to do that best in our life, and if we are trying the best, keeping good associations, just doing what's there, it works. That's the thing, is that Krishna being in the heart, that you're making the endeavor, he accepts that. So otherwise, like you say, two camps are there, but the point is why are they both progressing in Krishna consciousness? Because there is some element from within they're doing that is sincere, and Krishna is accepting that. But it doesn't mean that either party might situate themselves nicely so that the material, cultural, and religious elements are working that well this lifetime. But it doesn't mean that they can't go back to Godhead. They remain too attached to those things. That's not because of the religion, that's because of material attachment. But if they're Krishna conscious, they're focused on that, that's their main focus, and on the cultural, then they're confused. Then, still, if they remember Krishna at the time of death, they'll go back to Godhead. And then, over there, they'll teach them the culture. You know, at some point, you're going to learn the culture as Krishna prefers it. So either you start practicing it here, it makes it so much easier there, or when you get there, then they'll teach you there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you can follow it here, it just makes life so much easier. But some say this, that that's what makes Krishna consciousness know. And we don't require any of this for Krishna consciousness, then in one sense, yes, but they're not, the situation that they'll put themselves in is worse, you know, out of the frying pan into the fire. So they cultivate the material attachments and think that that will cultivate Krishna consciousness. No, you have to deal with the attachments, but in a way that cultivates Krishna consciousness. And that only the Shastras explain. Modern can't explain that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So we do our best, and then Krishna, that's what Krishna says, he carries what he protect, you know, maintains what you have or protects what you have, and he carries what you lack. So whatever is there, then it works. That's why we're saying recommending the middle, because then in the middle you just, you know, exactly try to hit it the best you can. Doesn't mean we're not making mistakes, but at least the focus is correct. But as you say, because, and it's not that it's actually rougher, it's that you're aware of the roughness.
So it's more painful.
Yes, but only because you're aware of it.
Yeah.
But here, so, but what is that saying? That means you're more conscious, the intelligence is being used more. While the others, then they're a bit more asleep. You know, I say. So you're talking about, the guy that's eating the meal and talking about he knows it's illusion, but it tastes great.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think that's the, is that the blue pill? I can't remember which pill is worse. You'd think the blue pill is ignorance and something like that, yeah. But you'd think it'd be the blue pill and the yellow pill. Then you'd remember it better. Or the white pill. So, the but because we're aware, it's more effective, and you move forward quicker, so therefore the pain gets over sooner. While the other, it carries on for longer, but it also, then it has distractions that it can get even more long. If you're not careful, then, you know, like the demigods, why are they in the heavenly planets? Right? Why aren't they born in families of devotees? Because they weren't careful enough. They weren't serious enough. But someone who became serious, then if they don't make it, then they take birth in the family of devotees. Because then it's about Krishna consciousness. It means you still have to work out your anarthas, but it's and become Krishna conscious. But for the demigods, they're basically whatever's their anarthas, they're reveling in them. And then, you know, it'll run out, and then they'll come back here, and then the problem is then, you know, you have no facility but still have that same desire. And then you have to, then it's a matter, will you take up Krishna consciousness? The opportunity will be given, but whether you'll take it. While the other is that you're aware of it, or you could say painfully aware of it, but then it moves forward. That's why I said motive goodness is bitter in the beginning, sweet at the end. Well, passion is sweet at the beginning, bitter at the end. So that's the whole thing, is that yes, you can fit in, you can do all these different things, you can, you know, whatever it is, but then in the long run, then it'll turn bitter. Because material life is never that great. Or as I say, the material world is overrated. So if one's like that, one's sober. That's why the term is used, sober. Then such a person who's sober means they see. And so then it works much quicker for them. And then Krishna takes care. And so one moves forward much quicker. But as you go, you become more aware and more refined. So it may appear that the suffering is staying the same, but actually if you look at it, it's not. It's becoming less and less and less. Just like for a Brahmin, a small thing, then emotional disturbance is more major. Unless they're for a Shudra, they live for emotional insanity. You know? You know? So that's the it appears so, but it's not. And so that's why if one stays on that point, then when you try to apply yourself in the Krishna consciousness, you get much more effect for much longer before one forgets. Well, on the other, then unless there's some big festival or something like that, then it's just like, let's say, for example, you should have, you know, some senior devotees And they're in Mayapur or Vrindavan or even many times, wherever they are. If there's not some other program happening at night and they're not, you know, feeling like they're going to die or something, then they much of the time have a program, just call devotees together and have a kirtan. So in other words, if there's an opportunity, they just have a kirtan. And, you know, some may do bhajan, some may do kirtans, some will stand up, do kirtans, others may give some discussions or whatever. They'll hearing and chanting will just be automatic, right? But for others, unless you have, let's say, like, what do you call it? You know, Hari Nam Day or Hari Nam Week or
what's Kirtan Mela.
Kirtan Mela, then no one has a kirtan. You know what I'm saying? So when that happens, it's a big thing. You go, you get involved. You know, you really feel it. You're up there dancing. It's all ecstasy. And then after that, you can go back to, you know, crawling under your rock and whatever you do until the next big program. And so those things do bring one up from that. But someone who's more refined, then they just are always taking advantage of it. It doesn't need something big to absorb you in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So the advancement and all that will be subtle. One see it's just, you know, one's chanting more, one's reading more, it's more comfortable, you know. But it's not like ecstasy. You know, yeah, I was doing this, it was so great, you should try it, you know. And that kind of stuff works for a couple of weeks, and then they got to come up with something new. And so since it needs such a different external form, therefore then you start going through the stuff that the karmis are into. Does that make sense? Because, you know, well, this, yeah, I got into that, it was so inspiring, and that, come back in 2 weeks, they're doing something else. So that's the whole thing, is that the material world is not a wonderful place, and you can make it okay. That's what Prabhupada says, comfortable means it's not uncomfortable. So it's not that it's great, but it's not a disturbance. And so that if it'll be that like that, then it's considered that's good. And if you think back, yeah, that was nice. Because that's the point of the aparoksha. Is that if you concentrate on it, then you can see, yes, it's been nice. But if you don't concentrate on it, you don't notice it. Well, the other, there has to be an actual focus.
What's aparoksha?
Aparoksha means is that where you're experiencing but not aware.
And paroksha means you're
aware. Paroksha means you hear from others, so therefore you're aware. You know, Facebook is paroksha.
You should rename it.
Yes. Yeah, the Parokshavadis. Yes. The example of aparoksha means is that you're experiencing, but you're not aware, because you're experiencing. Because to be aware means you're not experiencing. Right? That's the whole thing, is that that's the thing. It's not, oh, it's, you know, well, yeah, you talk about it and that's going to, you know, make it happen, but while you're talking about it, it's not happening. You know, so that's why they have to be so animated while they talk about it, because otherwise it's not happening. Right?
So,
it's just like, let's say cultures where they really talk a lot, does anything get done? No, that's the whole point.
Nobody did it.
Yes. You know, and those who are official, then they don't talk. Yeah. That's why people generally, when they get older, aren't necessarily retiring to Switzerland.
Yeah. I'm from Switzerland.
Yes. Let's go down to Italy. They talk. Yes. You said you were saying something.
Yeah. The biggest challenge, you know, for Indian devotees.
The biggest challenge for Indian devotees.
Yeah. Is that when they come to Krishna consciousness, then whatever culture they are following previously, coming to Krishna consciousness, like different festivals as Dashera, Diwali, they completely...
They lose their culture because they think that is Krishna conscious because it's all Maya.
Yeah.
But Srila Prabhupada told Subhag Maharaj when he joined, It says don't forget all the, you know, training that you got from your parents in the way of the culture and all those things. So that remains. See the Westerners, basically, when they join Krishna consciousness, then whatever they did before that you might call culture, they do have to give that up. Like that. That's just the way it is. So, therefore, they had neither philosophy nor religion. So, therefore, but their religion's getting in the way, then they take up the philosophy. And also, it's where you give up everything in that. It's technically, if we want to be real technical, but we don't want to be annoying, it's very Christian. Right? Because Christianity is supposed to be, as we discussed, Judaism, so it has a philosophy and a culture. But they gave up the culture, kept the philosophy, gave up the culture, and then implemented the contemporary culture. But the problem is as the contemporary culture changes, then you have to change the culture with it. So at the time, then Paul is able to figure out how to adjust the culture, or what parts of the culture to keep that are not, as far as he sees, in conflict with the philosophy. Right? But as it goes, it'll start to come in conflict, because unless you're dealing with tradition, then it's just going to be according to anybody's guess what it's going to be. Is that what it says? Yeah. So
because what is happening is being related to atheism. Like, the kids, the next generation, is neither taken to Krishna consciousness and nor do they follow any culture. So, you know, they are moving towards atheism, and that's the problem.
Yes, but that's because in India they follow their religion but not the philosophy.
Mm.
Right? It means the religion for all Hindus is the same.
Yeah.
The philosophy is different.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? It means religion is the same. Now, if we're talking about someone who's following the Indian culture, do they all have a guru of some sort or another? Right? And within that, are parents also counted as part of the gurus and their teachers, whatever taught them in school, right? And then along with them, they have some kind of quasi or some kind of thing that they would, you know, that's got a bigger beard and all that than the other gurus, okay? And do they all accept the Shastra?
Yeah.
The Veda.
Yeah.
Are they all comfortable with a fire yajna?
Yes.
Are they all comfortable that there's a deity?
Yes.
Are they all comfortable that you wave auspicious things in front of the deity at regular times during the day?
Yes.
Are they all comfortable that you get up early in the morning,
yes,
and take a bath?
Yeah,
and brush your teeth?
Wow.
Yeah, and wash your backside with water? Right? Yes. They're good with all this, right? You understand? And that, you know, that, what do you call it? That what you eat has plenty of masala in it. Right?
If someone is a Bengali. I hope I
heard correct. No. You're saying that other parts of India don't use any spices.
Yeah, we do use.
Yeah. How many different spices are there?
Plenty.
So then, when I say masala, that means
mustard oil.
The Bengalis use it. So do the Rajasthanis. So do the Punjabis. So too, it means you cannot make paneer tikka without mustard oil.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. Right? So it's quite popular, mustard oil, actually. It's just that Bengalis always eat it, while others will use it for certain things.
culture, not philosophy.
Yes. So now, therefore, religiously, all Hindus are the same, and they just have this, you know, thing where they're a little bit tolerant. So your guru is this one, their guru is that one, your deity is this one, their deity is that one, and this and that. If they want to get a little bit jiggity, of course, then they fight with each other. And that was the last forest fire we had, right? So then they fight amongst themselves. You know, famously then Vaishnavs and Shaivites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. But, you know, so that means that Hindus have religion, But there's no philosophy, other than it's all one. But, you know, that's not a whole lot of philosophy. Right? Mm-hmm. So then you go to the Western thing, they don't have a culture. Mm-hmm. Like, what time should you be getting up in the day in the West? There's no rule. What should you be eating?
Whatever is in the fridge.
Yeah, whatever is in the fridge. But I saw one family once that whatever you don't eat goes in the fridge. They would cook something, whatever's left over, you put it in the fridge. And then after 6 months, you clean the fridge out and throw everything away. So someone was there cooking in their house, and they had put some stuff in the fridge, and then they're cooking, and while they did, they opened the fridge, got things out, and were cooking with it. And the person was shocked. You actually took stuff out of the fridge? That's where we put things to, you know, that's, you know, it's like the elephant graveyard, you know, that's where things go to die, right, you know, so. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just that you don't want to throw it all at once, you know, because you wait till it collects, there's enough that it's worth, you know, getting out one of those big black garbage bags, and then you just dump everything in there, and then you're done. But, you understand? So there is there technically, you know, a particular way you have to dress or eat or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Different groups will have different things. So they don't have the culture. But if you bring up the philosophy, they can catch that because they're used to, you know, academia and discussing this and that and people coming over all their... Because it's only philosophies that they come up with, whether they have any validity or not. But it's... So they can catch that easier. But not the metaphysical. That they're only used to the physical. You know. So what's the connection between the religion and the philosophy? That's the metaphysical. That's what's weak in both. So because one only knows one, they can't accept the religion. The other knows the religion, they can't catch the philosophy. And so then it's the metaphysics that kind of hold it together. You know, so therefore, if the Indians give up their culture because the Westerners gave up their culture, then that's a mistake, because you can't say that the Westerners gave up their culture because there was nothing to give up. They didn't have any culture. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... So it is a problem. And why? Because it's so much easier, it's so much more practical. Because trying to get things efficiently done, then if you include the culture, it takes so much longer. Right? If it's time for eating and there's no culture, then everyone just, whenever they like, comes in, you know, gets a bowl or a plate or a spoon or whatever they like, you know, a bucket and that, and comes in, gets things, fills it up, goes, sits wherever they want, anywhere, and eats however they want, and then leave it wherever they like. You know what I'm saying? So now if we want to have some culture, it means then you have to have a place where the eating is. It has to be set up. Everyone has to stop whatever they're doing, come there, sit down there. Then you have to have proper conversation. You can't just discuss anything. You know, then someone has to be serving and, you know, seeing that everybody's getting. And then once all that's done, not to do that, you need serving utensils and all those kind of things. And so the volume of things that get dirty are much more. Right? You know, the other extreme is you cook in the pot and then you eat out of the pot, and then what's left, then you just put it back off on the stove, throw more stuff inside, and reboil it, because you keep boiling, it kills the bacteria, so you won't get sick. Technically, this is called mulligan stew. And yeah, it's
good.
It's good, and a lot of people, if you go back more in time, they lived like that, and those are the founding fathers of your modern, you know, countries and societies. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot to go on, you know. So that's how they ate. They didn't take a bath. They wore the same clothes forever. Basically, you changed the shirt when it fell apart, and then you got a new shirt, then you put that on and wore it until that one fell apart. And you only wore something different than that as if you were, like, going to church or that. Then you put on the church one that you put on every time you go to church. Not that you wash it in between. Because you just went to church, so you put it back on the hanger and put it in the closet. So now you understand why they give up their culture? Yeah. So, and now you understand why we say it wasn't culture in the first place? Yeah. So one has to be careful, is that don't make this mistake. The Indians shouldn't make this mistake. And the Westerners shouldn't make the mistake that it's all Maya. The point is the principle is good. They have to just shift. Because otherwise, if they throw it out, they throw out everything. Yeah? Okay. Yes.
About this not bathing, once you mentioned that Queen Victoria, you heard, took two baths in her life.
Yes. Yeah, when she was born and after she was dead. Both times in milk. So it was a good bath.
But technically it's only once. Just when she was dead.
Yeah, because well, they don't understand about the soul, so therefore she gets attributed with the second one. She gets the benefit of the second one. So. Otherwise, you're reducing her baths by 50%. You know, that looks bad. So, you know, she should get the full 100% benefit. That's that. Yeah. Oh, wow. The guy's... guy's making his move, right? That's amazing that he got that. That means he must have crawled over there, hooked it on, then came over here, hooked it to there, and then crawled back. A lot of work, huh? But it's easy. If they want to pack up house, they just wind it up back into themselves and then go somewhere else and set up their house again. Okay, we... Okay, it's just as a general rule, you see why we sometimes use the Judaic cultural elements more than we use the Christian ones? Because at least there is some. Yeah. Prabhupada says, Bengal is east, and the farther west you go, the more degraded it becomes. Wow. Mosquitoes are back. These are the tiger ones, or they have stripes? I didn't look that carefully. Does it have stripes?
The belly has.
Yeah, it means I don't mean the wings. I mean, we're not talking.
Back is black. Belly has white and black and white.
White and black.
Yeah.
Can't remember what the tiger ones. If they're black, stripes. Oh, whatever. Because the tiger ones are big. I heard. Srila Sanatan Goswami says that some people say that the forest fire was a friend of Pralambasuras. Right, so then you kill one and then the other comes back for their revenge. So I think some of these ones where Sanatan Goswami say, some say these are the ones that are in the Bangalore Krishna, what do you call it?
Cartoons,
yeah. Because you see that what was mentioned in the previous one is some say, and this one, that Sanatan Goswami says, that was their main feature.
Yeah.
Oh, look at Krishna.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, Bangalore ones.
What's the connection somewhere?
Oh, okay.
Cartoons.
Yeah. No, because it says he was a friend of Pralambasuras, so... they came together, so Paloma came to do his thing, and the forest fire guy came to do his.
So then Kali is connected with the first one, and then Paloma is connected with the second.
Second, yeah, it seems to be. That's some say, but it's one of those that it works, but it's not need to be emphasized, but it could. You know. So then, if that way, if they're a friend, therefore you see the atheist. What would actually. The significance would be atheism and antagonistic philosophies, then they are you could say, friends with the desire to enjoy the opposite sex, and, you know, dunam, junam, sundarim, and the opposite sex. they go together very nicely. So you see, the more someone's atheistic, the tendency, the more they are, you know, into sense gratification, gross and subtle sense gratification. Or the more they're into gross and subtle sense of gratification, the more they become atheistic. So like that, you could say. So that's the importance of those connections. Then you see how they go together. Because you were saying they look the same because they're friends. They connect.
So it appears that we look at the Leela from different perspectives. We look from here and up. But then the residents of Vrindavan, they don't care of it, you know, Anartha and whatever it is. They see it just Leela.
They see the prema and that and all that. So because being Rasikas, they see that. So until we're Rasikas, then we tend to see things other than the spiritual rasa. So then these other aspects are there to purify us. That's why, because the Nityasiddhas, the eternal associates, they don't have a problem. Going through this is simply all it's doing is increasing their affection for Krishna.
Right.
But for those who are coming up into the Leela from the material world, they were conditioned souls, and now they've come to the liberated platform, they're taking part in the Lord's pastimes, they need to be purified of these things. Not in a gross fashion, but in a subtle fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that fragrance of that material existence is still there. So going through these then brings them to that platform. And then we, being conditioned by hearing these, we get purified and it brings us to that transcendental platform. So everybody gets... that's like you're saying. Everybody gets benefit from the same pastime, the same explanation. Then so depending upon the situation, you bring out the different, you know, which needs to be brought out more. And so for us, if we're not, you know, overwhelmed with ecstasy and rolling on the ground, we don't have to worry, because even though we're on 10th canto, we're being exposed to this, we're getting purified. The discussions on the mentality of the devotee at that level is being discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we have another few years to get to that platform. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued. The cowherd boys opened their eyes and were amazed to find not only that they and the cows had been saved from the terrible fire, but they had been brought back to the Bandira tree. Okay, so this must be where Bandiravan is, right? Bandira is on the other side, no? Is it on this side or that side? It's on the other side. Yeah. Srila Sridhar Swami writes, brought to Bandirain, right? You know, it's a
rainforest.
Oh, I said Bandirain. I thought it was one of the
Middle Eastern
countries. Bahrain. Yeah, that's what they call it. Bahrain. They could call the Bandirain Yatra, right? Okay. But brought to Bandira in an instant. Then opening their eyes, they became amazed. After having carried on his own shoulders, Sridham and others of his cowherd friends who were enjoying the sport, the Lord then exhibited his personal opulence by drinking the forest fire.
Drinking.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, like the circus, you know, one of those carnival shows. These people, you know, eat fire and things like that. So it's something that, you know, it's a good show. Yeah, so that's what he did. He drinking. Because in the West they don't drink like that, unless you're Irish. But yeah,
Okay.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Srila Sanatana Goswami adds. Yes. Bandira is the name of a palm tree which is famous throughout the world, located on the southern bank of Sri Jamuna. Southern bank. So then that's there, that's east, west, north, south. So then as she turns that way. So that means it's either on this side from where it turns to Mathura or where it turns back there. Okay. In a northwest direction from the Shiva temple in Sri Vrindavan. northwest. Northwest. Shiva temple. Then that goes down. Northwest. So that's northwest. Okay, yeah, so it's on that side. So that we put it on the southern side of the Jamuna. Yeah, the other side of... from opposite Keshi Ghat and then farther upriver, it would appear, because that's where it then turns back, where you can be on the southern side. The Munja forest south of that... Okay, south, and that's east-west, north-south. That means towards Mathura. At a distance of 5 kroshas, thus the two places should be understood. So 5 kroshas, I think a krosha is 2 miles. So that's 10 miles. So that's quite a ways away. So just in a moment, they were from there, because they were playing there, right? And then that whole thing with Parlambasura happened. And so that, because it was about the Bandira tree. And so then the cows, and playing in that, the cows wandered off, and they were that far away. And then they went looking, and when they found them, there was the fire. So when he told them to close the eyes, then in a moment, they were back at the Bandira tree. Okay. So we can understand it wasn't just, you know, short. It was, you know, serious distance. Sukadev Goswami continued. When the coward boy saw that they had been saved from the forest fire by the Lord's mystic power, which is manifested by his internal potency, they began to think that Krishna must be a demigod. But in any case, he's their friend, but they're not thinking that he's God, he's just a demigod. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, this verse shows that although they had seen Krishna's power, that knowledge could not cover the strength of their Shakya Prema, as was the case of Arjuna and others, right? So this is the difference, right? Who asked this? You were brought up the point about, does this knowledge then cover? Yeah. Like that. But as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is pointing out, it doesn't. It doesn't have that power. Okay. Yeah. Yoga virya means power to attain or achieve extraordinary things. The extraordinary thing was getting saved. This power arose through the instruction of Yoga Maya. Seeing the power of Krishna to save them, accomplished through his Yoga Maya Shakti, they thought Krishna was a type of Deva. Even that realization was slightly informal. For the boys thought, because Krishna has done things humans cannot do, he must be a Deva, not a human. Because we are his friends, we must also be Devas, right? So that's the whole thing. It doesn't matter how big he gets; they just move up with him. So that's the whole thing. That's cool. How could we be friends if we were not similar? Because the equals, they're friends. There's not equals, then there's not friends. Does that make sense? Yeah. How could we be friends if not similar? Thinking like this, they were overwhelmed with bliss, right? Because they're friends with Krishna. And if he's a Devata and he can do all that, even better, because that makes us Devatas. Then we're all, you know, we're all cool. So is that an answer?
Yeah.
So then that's how it works out. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued. It was now late in the afternoon, and Lord Krishna, accompanied by Balaram, turned the cows back towards home. Playing his flute in a special way, Krishna returned to the cowherd village in the company of his cowherd friends, who chanted his glories. The young gopis took the greatest pleasure in seeing Govinda come home, since for them even a moment without his association seemed like 100 ages. Footnote 23. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 15 to 16 to Bhagavad Arkamichi Mala, chapter 6, entitled Tasting the Sublime Nature of Relationships with the Lord, Bhagavad Rasa Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. So, for them, then this not seeing Krishna then creates this taste. That's what's special. So that's the specialness of the... tasting the sublime nature of relationships. So the coward boys are tasting one aspect, it brought it up, the four of them. Now it brings it up how they're tasting the relationship. So in this way, all the different devotees have a different taste right? Because it's yeah, the specifics of the taste is different for each one of them. Because as you have the five rasas, they each have what is their particular, what's the definition of their rasa, the definition of the taste, the definition of all these things. Right? We'll get into that later. When later means the Chaitanya Charitamrita level, when it makes sense to us, or make more sense.
But previously we said that it will make sense in Canto 10.
It'll make sense, but the finities of, yes. Now, what were we discussing? So now, are we able to discuss the five elements of rasa? The Stai Bhav, V Bhav, Anu Bhav, Sattvika Bhav, and Sanchari Bhav, and it's not a confusion.
Not so much.
Yes. So, but before when that came up, remember, then it was a total confusion. So he said, one would understand it when you get here. So now what we're talking about is the fineness of exactly what things go with exactly which rasa. That will come later. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, just as he subdued the forest fire for the cowherd boys, he released the divine gopis from the fire of separation as stated in verse 16. Okay, so then it has that element with them. So the cowherd boys, it has one aspect with then the cowherd girls, then it has another aspect. So the principle is the same, but one is the forest fire, means it's a physical fire, and that, and then these other aspects with the gopis, it's just the fire of separation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, although everyone is blissful when Krishna entered the village, the bliss of Jashoda with her strong parental affection was outstanding. This was described in 10:14:47. Now in this verse, the bliss of the gopis, headed by Srimati Radharani, is described as Krishna entered the village. So these different times of entering, then different pastimes are brought out, or different aspects of it, some different details, different rasas that Krishna's having. Because otherwise, then once these are all established, then these are what's go on, and there are various things. And many times, they can all be going on at once. Mother Jashoda is very happy in tasting what she tastes in 10:14:47 in the Bhagavatam verse. And now in this one, but that's 10:19:16, then it describes what the gopis are feeling when Krishna comes. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's not that they're not all going on at once, but just we get them one at a time so we don't become overwhelmed. Yes. In terms of both quality and quantity, the gopi's love was supreme. Parama means there is nothing beyond it. Which gopi? Her uncommon quality is mentioned. She expressed a moment's separation from Krishna as 100 yugas.
That's good. Good.
Which?
She experienced.
What did I say?
Express.
But she also did that. She's experienced it, and then she said it. Yeah. Okay. So the experience is the one being brought out here. Yeah. I was just thinking of Shikshastika. So, Kshanam in neuter instead of regular masculine gender is traditional usage here. To experience a moment as 100 yugas is the quality of Adhirudha Mahabhava. The highest state of prema. After proceeding through rati, prema, sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, bhava, and mahabhava, according to Ujjvala Nilamani, the gopis such as Radha possess this type of mahabhava. Right. So in other words, prema is the standard that is there for anybody in the spiritual world, and depending upon their particular rasa, it may go beyond that. But like Shanta, I think, doesn't go beyond prema. Like that. Maybe some individuals, but then that's another thing. But and then, so then, through that, then, Okay, no, rati is before. So prema. So then sneha, then we said, is that more, that little bit of informality and stuff like that. So those who are closer may have that kind of thing. Man then is anger, so you normally don't see that anywhere in other places. Pranaya, that closeness. Rag, that attachment. So different ones have different aspects. But for the gopis, they have all that. So then that'll bring them to Mahabhava. Right, so here we see it's where it's called Baha, Bhava and Mahabhava. That's why you see the first one's called Rati, not Bhava. Right? So Mahabhava, then Mahabhava has three levels. It has just the standard level, and then it has this Adhirudha Mahabhava, and then there's something above that. Madananayaka Mahabhava, right? That's the third level that only Radharani has. Now everybody in Radharani's group has this Adhirudha Mahabhava. And if you're in somebody else's group, then you don't have that. You just have Mahabhava. And that Mahabhava can also be attained. Even some of the cowherd boys have that, the intimate ones, like Sudama. Subal, because they take part in Krishna's pastimes where he, you know, is involved with the gopis, because he's that close, he can be there. So he can taste when everything, because they're functioning on that level of Mahabhava, he can appreciate the ecstasy that's going on. He'll be tasting it from the position of a cowherd boy, but it will go up to that place of Mahabhava. While the gopis are tasting it then in conjugal rasa, then in Mahabhava. Does this make some sense?
Yeah.
Yes. So, see? It's making sense. Well, if you'd mentioned this before, it's kind of like, could you speak in English?
These gopis.
Boys or girls?
The boys,
okay.
The boys who experience Adhirudha Mahabhava.
No, the boys don't get to Adi. It means, oh, you're talking about what I was just talking. No, that whether they get to Adhirudha Mahabhava, they'll just get to Mahabhava. Yeah. But I don't think it's going to come up in your essay. So you don't have to worry about that aspect. Later, maybe, but not at this point. Right. So, but that's only a few of the cowherd boys. The Priyanarmasakas. Yeah, the other ones, no, they don't get to that. So that'll only be explained in Ujjvala Nilamani. So that will only be brought in with the Chaitanya Charitamrita that I know of.
Is it?
Means it may be referred to. It won't be a study on its own.
Oh, we're not going to study Ujjvala.
No, no. It may have references from them, just like the Acharyas are giving now references.
Yeah,
but I would expect that would continue throughout. So references will continue, but the technical points that I mentioned there, those will come up later. Is that, yeah. Okay. Chapter 20. Where did we start today? 19. Okay. No, but that's just now. I moved that. We were farther down. Oh, down to a few chapters today. Chapter. Yeah, we started way before that.
We started page
18. So we did 18 and 19. Did two chapters today. That's not bad.
We actually started in 17.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking we're going through it. I think also when we get up into Dwarka Leela, there's going to be many chapters that go like this. Because they're, you know, quite small and everything. So that's how we get through 90 chapters. Okay. So, that Pratigya there, those who are dear to Krishna are never destroyed. So we see is that then Krishna is saving the cowherd boys from the fire there. He's saving the gopis from the pain of separation. Mother Jashoda is so now happy that he's come back, all the residents of Vrindavan. So we see is that Krishna always protects the devotees. The devotees never become destroyed. You know, situations that they're in may be adjusted, but they as devotees never are destroyed. You know, but if we identify with the external as the secondary, we'll go, but how, Krishna, you know, this happened and this thing fell apart, my position or my, you know, my facility or different things like that. How can you say we're never destroyed? Because the devotee's never destroyed. If we falsely identify with an upadi and that gets destroyed, we can't complain about that because sarvupadi vinir muktam, that's the process of pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So because they just surrendered to Krishna, then everything works. Yes? So chapter 20. The rainy season at autumn in Vrindavan. We're going to get through a lot here, right? So. People have gradually degenerated to godlessness because the unauthorized atheistic propaganda in the age of Kali breeds the boundary of the Vedic injunctions. Breaks the boundary of the Vedic injunctions, right? So, in other words, it's the atheistic nature that breaks the Vedic injunctions. Otherwise, why would we break? This whole thing, oh, we're devotees, we don't care for the rules, or we chant, so therefore we don't have to follow the rules. These aren't actually what the Vedas are saying. Because you have to understand how that applies. Does that make sense? So, yeah, so we'll get into that. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 20th chapter, Sukadev Goswami, describing the beauty of the monsoon and autumn seasons, shows the excellent qualities of the sky, rivers, forest, through various analogies. Sardartha Darshani 10:21. These analogies illustrate the extraordinary beauty of Vrindavan while providing us with practical philosophical instructions to progress on the spiritual path while avoiding common pitfalls. Oh. Is this one that Prabhupada then translated and made the book for preaching in the Orient?
Light of Bhagavad?
Yeah. Is that based on this chapter? Yeah, okay. So that's it? Yeah. Sometimes I was always taking it with the prayers of the personified Vedas, but it's not. It's this one. It was all because they like that kind of analogies. You know, there in you know, Japan and these places, they that's the kind of how they do their poetry and things like that. So then he thought he'll take this and make commentary on that, and then that will be. And then he, I think he asked that it be illustrated. So then it was illustrated with that kind of oriental art, yeah. And then with this, and so then it becomes a very nice book for that. So there's, you know, preaching to that, but then finding what aspect that they would appreciate. But it's not that you're adjusting it, it's that you're finding the right aspect. Okay, so now that we've read through the Pratigya and the Adhyaya Prakashika, stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Prabhupāda ki.